At this point, I'd like to call for ready announcements from the attorneys in this morning's case. And this morning's case is 0319840CV, Nataji versus the State of Texas for the protection of Vicki Roberts. And counsel, please introduce yourself.
My name is David Gonzalez, and we announce ready for Mr. Nataji.
Thank you.
Good morning. Maricela Arlindo and Hillary Riley here on behalf of the Travis County Attorney's Office and State of Texas for the protection of Vicki Roberts pursuant to Chapter 78.01 of the Texas Code of Criminal Procedure.
Thank you very much. And as you see, I have Justice Baker and Justice Triana here on the dais with us. And with that, I'm going to turn the floor over to Mr. Gonzalez on Mr. Nataji's behalf. And I hope that I have pronounced his name correctly.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Gonzalez.
Ms.
You
Chief,
may proceed, sir.
Ms. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. There used to be a time where you couldn't turn off your phone. The cord would go into maybe the kitchen, or you could go into the closet. But the best you could do was take it off the ringer. There used to be a time where not everybody in your household had their own phone. And there used to be a time where your phone, if not connected, didn't automatically go to voicemail. And that was the time of Scott. That was the time where the idea of an intrusiveness of repeated telephone calls constituted an abridgment of your right to privacy under that ground. And while our technology has changed, it's hard not to first address the elephant in the room, which is how can I advocate anything given the opinion in McDonald? And what am I asking for this court to do that can be consistent with, is there any room, or is it a complete overturn of McDonald and Ogle and Blanchard? And in addressing that, it's also important, I think, to address the past several weeks in this state, because as of September 1st, there are a series of new laws that both cause tremendous emotional turmoil and people to be offended between openly carrying guns and the intersection of First Amendment and Second Amendment, between whether or not a fetal heartbeat allows someone a right to an abortion, to whether or not internet comments now after September 1st can be a form of harassment and now stalking. So I appreciate the court giving us an opportunity to discuss these issues, both from a historical perspective on this case, because we have a different record than in McDonald. That was just a facial challenge, as well as what we think will happen for the future. So to that degree, where I'd like to begin is the first question is, what relief can we ask for that is consistent with McDonald, or what can we do related to McDonald? And I might begin by just discussing the differences between McDonald versus the Nataji matter. In McDonald, as a facial challenge, what we can tell from the information in the Williamson County case is that it was a direct, personal, private matter between two people that had a relationship. And it wasn't using social media.
But here, didn't we have direct messaging going to the family and Ms. Roberts?
I think there were a handful of messages. You're right, Your Honor. But the overwhelming amount was on social media and Facebook comments that I think provided the gravamen of what those complaints were. Second, I believe the testimony in the case was that the protected party was not on Facebook and didn't typically actively participate in social media, but it was her business and other associated businesses. So whereas in McDonald, the indictment or the information lists direct communication in a personal manner, Nataji has a different situation where it's all related to comments, number one, related to businesses and other organizations.
But also there were comments about Ms. Roberts' daughter, how is that related to the business?
It's not. It's not related in terms of distinguishing between McDonald, which we know is solely private. Number one, it's involving comments, which is a little bit different, so we think it's indirect. As Senator Huffman talks about in the bill that just passed and is now the law, she describes what we say is a loophole, perhaps that indirect comments aren't considered harassment. And as we look toward that part of our challenge, it then suggests that perhaps public comments could be treated differently than private comments, even in a public forum about a private matter. which becomes interesting because at that point it's a different analysis than what Scott or perhaps McDonald was. But you're right, Your Honor. I concede that there were, in a public sphere, very personal, private, inappropriate comments in that nature. I can't dispute that.
So are you saying that those are business related or that they're not business related?
No, they're not. They're not business related, but I think they were in that forum. And so it's different than in McDonald where it was, from what we can just tell from the information, because it was a facial challenge, private messages to that individual's private phone, as compared to here, a business advertises on Facebook, a business has a social media manager, they have lots of posts, and then these are comments privately about, not about the business itself. There were some posts where I think he's self-describing that he was abused or he was offended, but it clearly then steers into personal comments. So with that concept in mind, related to McDonald, I cannot dispute this court's holding consistently with Blanchard and Noble and McDonald that if you apply Scott says that this is not conduct that we consider First Amendment protection worthy based on an invasion of privacy concern. And so it allows me a few different arguments or areas that I can say where this court can go forward. The first is to wait. We've been waiting for the ruling from the Court of Criminal Appeals for quite some time on Ex parte Barton. I certainly wish it had happened during the legislative session, because then whatever thing the court had done would have allowed the legislature a chance to tinker with that statute that has passed, and I don't think it's going to be part of the third special session. Second, there's the possibility that there's corollary proceedings. This court channels up to the Supreme Court, and so you have a civil court analyzing the statute and a criminal court analyzing the statute. And third, the reason I looked at the Ospro case where Chief Justice Rose is, even if this court issued a ruling that was different than the Supreme Court, the legislature still very kindly said, Third Court of Appeals did this, we'd like to make the statute better. And I guess that's my request. I think I said very openly, the statute is not worth saving. And perhaps I should temper that to say, I think it can get better. And I think every time the courts do talk to the legislature, they seem to listen to say it can be improved. And I guess my concern in 2021 is the word offend and embarrass and annoy seems to be so broad that if we narrowed it to some of the darker and scarier terms that I provide in a demonstrative exhibit number 3, I think it provides better legislation. Because I think what's happening is that, to use the old adage, I know it when I see it, that's kind of the jurisprudence we have right now. Law enforcement officers aren't prosecuting or pressing charges if someone is repeatedly expressing concerns on a political view, but may do so differently here. And we don't see those test cases because it largely relies on the discretion of law enforcement to pick up those cases or not. But under the law, as Justice Keller had said, or Judge Keller had said, all it takes is a couple of comments that the other person finds offensive or annoying to trigger it.
But in this instance, didn't the evidence establish that it went beyond offensive and annoying, but frightening, and that Ms. Roberts testified she was in fear, and so much so she eventually sold the business and a variety of things, and had private security and had private security for her daughter. Didn't it go beyond just offensive?
So on a factual sufficiency issue, which is one of the parts of our appeal, I don't disagree. That was the evidence, that it was both the manner, the communications, as well as just the sheer number and the repetition of those being repeated over and over again. In one of the appendices, it was articulated of kind of 25 or so of the same comments just repeatedly put again and again and again in every single different forum. To the extent that here, you're right, in this case, there was evidence to that. And so when I discuss a larger challenge, perhaps if the statute said it's torment or place in fear of bodily injury, that 1993 statute, the first version before they didn't incorporate harassment, you're right. I mean, I think at that point the court can say, look, we can make that claim for stalking.
But doesn't this statute on stalking incorporate harassment? But it's not got separate and independent basis, not just harassment, correct?
It can't. You're absolutely right. It can, but once it incorporates that, I think it creates a poison pill by saying it can be so broad as to cause the annoy, embarrass language The previous version didn't have that. The previous version that went through Long and Kramer really was targeted toward that threat and that fear of imminent bodily injury or harm.
But isn't it disjunctive? I mean, it's or, not and. So a fact finder like Judge Perkins could have chosen the other pathway, correct?
You're right, and that's the state's argument. You're absolutely right. And I think our belief is that it creates even more of a broader net than just saying this is what that entails. But you're right, and I understand that argument as
well. Mr. Gonzalez, and I appreciate you being honest and telling us, look, this is what, you know, what I'm hoping to get out of this. But where we sit, where you have an either harassment, which, you know, we don't know what that means, but we have a very specific, you know, engaging in conduct that he knows or reasonably should know that the other person would regard as threatening bodily injury or death or an offense against the person's property. How do we do what you want us to do in informing whether it's the legislature or anybody else when we have to look at that in order to make a determination in our ruling?
Three ways. The first is the state repeatedly cites about half a dozen times what that comment would be, which is karma is going to get you, which is a bit more indirect than a direct threat that we know typically is not.
But he said karma is going to get you and you're getting what you deserve, correct?
Thank you so much. Karma is going to get you and you're getting what you deserve, which given maybe this weekend's posts on YouTube from a member of Congress having an AK-4, or I think a gun, saying I'm going to kill socialism, I'm going to kill these agendas. Our officials are using more and more violent imagery in conduct that is far worse than karma and what that happens. And so as a culture, I don't think we have spoken in manners that is reflective of how we should speak. But I don't think that the reference there leads to a direct threat like the previous case laws. For the first issue on sufficiency to say it doesn't count as a direct threat. The second is to be able to say that under what was alleged, what should have happened was the proceeding of a particular disjunctive threat, and that's what needed to be proved, because it's possible just as well that Judge Perkins said, I found this to be annoying. I found this to be embarrassing. But without that finding, then at that point, I do think there's the ability to say we'd like to seek a remand or we want to know what that finding was. And the third is to actually say the statute is too broad. That on a fundamental level, prior to the hearing, there was a facial challenge to this application. And the court might say the direct message is here, not that if you take out all of the Facebook messages, if you take out all those comments, and you're only left with the several direct messaging, then the evidence is insufficient to support that finding. So I do think there's three different paths, both on the record that we have compared to McDonald, plus the underlying statute.
And what is your basis that we can ignore the Facebook post? Doesn't that put the direct messages in context?
So, two ways. One, if the idea is privacy, if the whole foundation of Scott is privacy, Facebook isn't very private. And when a business advertises on Facebook, it's hard to then say they can advertise one way, and then when receive negative or critical comments, it's now an invasion of privacy. That's the first concern I have. Second is even Huffman in her bill analysis for the law that now changes says this may be a gap in the statute as to whether social media, which is kind of the new public forum, can constitute harassment. And I'm going to change that. And starting September 1st, that's now the new law. It wasn't the law at the time. But the fact that the legislature changed that, I think, is illustrative that that wasn't their intent possibly previously, or maybe it was, but the law didn't go as far enough as it needed to. Guns. So the reason I incorporate, because one of the issues is a Second Amendment challenge related to whether or not a finding of guilt or a finding of, I think the federal government also says that if you're not in the country legally or declared insane, you can also have your rights restricted. But from Heller and from the city of Chicago, there's different nexuses under intermediate scrutiny. And this is a little bit different than a reasonable belief of stalking, especially with online communication that I think, given what this state just did in a Second Amendment sanctuary state, have some issues with the Texas Constitution as well. But as it pertains to expressive conduct is where it gets to be more interesting. Right now, in several neighborhoods around South Austin, in a protest to a mask mandate, individuals are walking in front of schools during school hours with AR-15s in body armor. And the police can do nothing about it because that is your right to openly carry. But it's expressive, and it's conduct, and it's not speaking, but it is just like repeated comments on a Facebook page. And so if we say you can't do more than two, if you can't say you can't copy and paste the same comment, arguably after Citizens United, the more speech you have and the more forums can't be restricted. And so the concern that we raise is that positive comments seem to not run afoul of the statute, but critical or negative comments trigger the emotional response or the annoyance in a different way. So because it looks to the content of the speech, because the statute then makes you look at the content, we believe strict scrutiny applies. And we believe that when someone posts things, what they believe about guns or masks or about abortion, and does so to people that don't agree with them on Facebook, and does so over and over and over again, why can't they go to law enforcement and say, this is stalking? I don't want to see that content. That's the basis for our challenge. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Gonzalez. And if you'll bear with us, we'll have the podium cleaned before you come up. Thank you. So just stand by just a moment.
It's my podium. So.
He'll take care of you.
I told him he didn't touch my dirty hands.
We have some of the most awesome staff at the Third Court of Appeals, and they
take good
care of you.
I'm trying to put you
out of
work.
Still ready. You know, you have the magic touch.
Yeah, you do, Victor.
Yep.
Thanks.
Thank you, Courtney.
Thank you so much. Yes, counsel, go ahead. Take over the podium, ma'am.
Thank you. If I may, Your Honor, I'd like to move the exhibits over as well.
Yes, ma'am. Do you need any assistance, Ms. Galindo?
How about some lighting, Judge?
Let's make sure Mr. Gonzalez can see as well. The older I get, the closer it needs to get. No, I'm teasing. I can see it. Mr. Gonzalez, can you see, sir? Feel free to move where you need to move in order to be able to see.
Not really. Probably the only place that would be visible to all would be in the middle of the aisle.
And I think it was it not an exhibit of yours, counsel, as well? And we had copies of all the exhibits.
Yes, Your Honor, I believe this was the first provision from the Penal Code was incorporated on page 10 of Ms. Riley's excellent brief filed on behalf of the state. In addition, the second provision, chapter 7A, is also incorporated, but in addition to that, it was incorporated in the appendix.
Okay. And we do have all of us have the exhibits in front of us, both sides exhibits.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Ms. Galindo, you may proceed.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, please, Mr. Gonzalez, Ms. Riley, this honorable court. Ms. Roberts was very measured and restrained in her actions. At no time did she run to the courthouse steps seeking an application for protective order. In her sworn affidavit in support of the protective order under review, she noted in her summary of everything she and her family had been through from December 2013 up until the second physical encounter that endangered her life while she was in her vehicle in March of 2017. Quote, when he goes quiet, we are always hopeful that he has found a distraction and has moved on. We let our guard down, and then something happens, and he comes back with a vengeance. She is referring to the threat, to the fear that her, that the threatening conduct of Mr. Nataji over the course of all those years, in combination, not just statements, in combination with conduct, as not only confirmed by sworn testimony on two occasions by Ms. Roberts, but by Mr. Nataji's own sister-in-law, who testified before the court when the court heard evidence for a day and a half, in addition to hearing from Special Agent, who documented that Mr. Nataji had not only concealed his identity 20 times in making these posts, but had posted in excess of 301 times. And Ms. Roberts noted how she has this real fear that her, she and her family have had to change security systems, they've had to get security guards, and a beautiful legacy in business of 92 years, she had to sell. It just wasn't worth it. In her words, he wins. He wins. She just couldn't do it to her daughter to give her the business. And then we heard about the text. Even after Ms. Roberts applied and it came in at the trial court level, there was a text where Mr. Nataji described to his own family, and it was turned over to the police, just as Ms. Roberts had reported these matters to the police, that he would commit a mass shooting at the dealership. A mass shooting. And what's interesting, there's some discussion that, oh, he didn't know. He couldn't have known. He complied with A1 by knowing, because he changed his identity. Not only did he change his identity 20 times, he then peppered statements about her. Statements like, this family, they have pedophiles. She employs pedophiles. Her business, and she condones abuse of children. If there's anything that endangers our lives, no one in society tolerates information or accusations. No one tolerates harm coming to children, particularly from pedophiles. That super information highway can reach the darkest, most remote prison cells. It's intolerable in there, and it's certainly intolerable out here, where any of us could find Ms. Roberts and her family. That is not protected speech. This case isn't about protected speech. Justice Byrne, you pointed out that this statute, the stalking statute 42072, which was not only the basis for the application for protective order, but it was also the finding of the court. The court relied on the threatening conduct of bodily injury or death to Ms. Roberts that caused her and her family fear. And the judge said a reasonable person would be in fear of either death or injury or worse. And it's reasonable that her family felt threatened by Mr. Nataji's conduct, and that they had a real fear of bodily injury or death. The evidence supports that.
How do you respond to Mr. Gonzalez's argument on behalf of Mr. Nataji that this was out there in Facebook world and your client didn't really even herself use it? She had hired people to put up that, and that's the gravamen of the speech. And so it doesn't have the same impact as direct telephone calls or direct messages.
I appreciate Mr. Gonzalez's advocacy. But his emphasis is misplaced in that Mr. Nataji's conduct does not exist in a vacuum. He physically, in 2016 and 2017, encountered and acted on the statements he made over all these websites. He specifically researched. Part of her testimony was, he knows us, he knows about us. He knew she had dedicated some of her life work to helping children, children's charities. He specifically went directly on those charities and made allegations of pedophilia and abuse of disabled children. None of us are an island. We do not live in a vacuum. And the information superhighway, it goes through the fiber optics or maybe Ethernet, and it gets to our homes, the homes of perhaps someone who's had outrages, perhaps to parents who care a great deal about children, everywhere. It is the information superhighway. And it's interesting, the court, this isn't anything new. The United States Supreme Court, in a case that really addresses the concern, is the statements don't contribute to the exchange of ideas. Not all speech is protected. And in that case, the Watts Court said, taken in context and regarding the nature of the statement is very important. There had already been a physical event in 2013. It is one of the bookends. And then in between, there were some hostile comments about her and her family and threats. And then it closed out with more physical confrontation. And what was really telling about that last incident in before she went to the courthouse, it was after several cease and desist letters to him, after she had tried telling him, leave us alone. And it was done, not only was he anonymous on the internet, she testified that vehicle was a loaner car from another dealership. We know she lived in fear because of what I said. During the silence, that's stalking, when you're wondering what's next. When you're wondering what's next, is he around the corner? That's not paranoia. That is what threatening conduct to you or your family does to you. It creates a very real fear that reasonable people will understand, because we've all been told, if someone tells you who they are, believe it. Believe it. He told Ms. Roberts who he was over and over and over and over again. She believed him. And even though she waited, she shared her fear. His former sister-in-law confirmed it, and the special agent investigated just how far Mr. Nataji had gone. Your Honors, just as Ms. Roberts was careful, waited, didn't rush to the courthouse steps, I know that Mr. Gonzalez is very persuasive. And I know, especially these past few years, we've been hearing a lot about what is free speech. But of the three branches of government, the government who steps up, the branch that steps up and resolves, whether it's a national crisis or whether there's concern that someone's rights are being infringed, and is not vulnerable to the political whims or clever discussions, is the judiciary. The judiciary studies itself and the debate. It applies precedent. And this very court had a case concerning, there was a lot made of who Ms. Roberts is and how she's worked really hard in this community. And others may know who she is outside of her dealership because of her contributions to the community. There was a case this court heard against Hal Ketchum, the singer. And in that case, in 2016, applying the very same stalking statute, the trial court affirmed the lifetime protective order that prohibited a firearm, prohibited the exact same conduct based on the same finding by Judge Perkins that Judge Perkins did in this case. In fact, arguably, Ms. Roberts had much worse fear. In that case, I believe the finding for the firearm was based on this stalker fan, this fan who became a stalker. She did a signal of a gun at the family. In this instance, not only was there the text that he shared with the family referencing doing the mass shooting at the dealership, but if we think about those incidents with the physical confrontations in the vehicle, it is well established in Texas law that a vehicle is a deadly weapon. So when we look
at 7A.05, the conditions specified in the order, the court has absolute authority to prohibit possession of the firearm and the conduct that was outlined. In addition, the court was able to suspend any license to carry a handgun.
And I know the other side mentions, well, they're not intimate partners. This is a different circumstance. Not only did this very court not concern itself with the fact that a fan became a stalker and was unrelated to Hal Ketchum when it affirmed the trial court's order prohibiting the possession of a firearm in that lifetime protective order, it was not concerned about it then. I'm sorry. It was not concerned about it then, but the statute itself, I know that Mr. Nachaji thinks that the restrictions imposed by Judge Perkins, particularly with the Second Amendment, are limited to intimate partner relationships when it comes to protective orders. If we look at the text, and I know we've all been living through a pandemic, clearly a seminal event in all our lives, and at the same time, there's been a very quiet one, but a textualist revolution, a demand from the U.S. Supreme Court that we turn back to statutory construction. And we look at it. Nowhere in the text of 7805 is it required that the parties be intimate partners.
Indeed. And counsel, as it relates to the firearm, I think Judge Perkins' order went so far as to say he couldn't be in a house with a household, another household member had a firearm. Is that a mile too far under the protective order? Certainly, your argument is that the statute authorizes Mr. Nataji not to have the possession of a firearm, but being in the household with anyone else that has a firearm is also a preclusion under this protective order, as I think I've read it. So your thoughts in that regard?
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, the individuals who have not distinguished their own by their conduct Second Amendment rights, they still have it. If we've learned anything from this legislative session is that the Second Amendment is alive and well in the state of Texas. And so that individual, by choosing to live in the household with Mr. Nataji, that's not Ms. Roberts' fault that she lives in fear and that he's prohibited from possessing a firearm. That individual can easily reconsider where they've chosen to be under the order. It
but
isn't anything
Galindo,
that the court ordered or imposed.
Do you have any legal authority for that prohibition? It's not in the statute, so is there any legal authority that you have that the judge can order that?
Your Honor, I hope I can answer this in a way that addresses your good concern. In looking at it through statutory construction of the four corners of 7805. The order presupposes that wherever Mr. Nataji is, that is where that Second Amendment prohibition is. And given the dangers that the firearms pose. And I think in this particular case, when a family member confirms access to a firearm and a willingness to use it, and already a deadly weapon has been used, the vehicle, and only because Ms. Roberts avoided and saved herself from being injured. I hope I've answered that, Your Honor, but I believe
The state's argument is that if he is in a household where somebody else has a firearm, that he's in possession of that firearm? Is that the argument?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Would that also transfer if he's visiting somebody's household temporarily?
I understand the court's concern. It follows Mr. Nataji. And so if I were to counsel Mr. Nataji, it would be that he cannot be where there is a firearm. Even if that person's rights remain in place. So it is a question of restricting Mr. Nataji and not the individuals where he might be visiting, Your Honor.
Thank you.
I want to thank the court for your time today. And again, I just want to underscore that we are grateful for your time and for your measured response, despite the good advocacy on behalf of Mr. Nataji, and despite the emotions that are triggered by the First and Second Amendment. This court has a solemn responsibility. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Galinda. And in counsel, if you'll wait, we'll get it all cleaned up for you, sir. These procedures are all new to all of us, but we want to make sure you guys get out of this courthouse safe today. Thank you, sir. And Mr. Gonzalez, thank you.
May it please the court. Horrific behavior by the Hillsborough Baptist Church members, that upon the deaths of military service members, these individuals would have giant placards saying the most despicable and hateful things that had nothing to do with the service members. And the court did not agree with the speech or the homophobic remarks or have any nexus between that person's death and what they were speaking. But when the court time and time again in Reed versus the City of Gilbert says that when you look at the content of the speech, when you look at its communicative value, it is presumptively unconstitutional. And had Mr. Nataji taken his internet posts and he and a bunch of people put them on placards and went out in front of the business every day and did the same thing that he did on the internet, it wouldn't be stalking. It would be speech, because we see that time and time again in front of the Capitol, in front of abortion clinics. That element is considered First Amendment, but doing the same thing online may not. Regardless of what those placards say, offensive, untrue, hateful comments. Because those restrictions relate to sidewalk distancing, and for Hillsborough, whether a city could erect a specific First Amendment protected area, because those regulations didn't go what was on the billboard. And that's the difference between this statute, is when this statute says, and it looks for the concept of what then creates, from what Judge Keller talks about, embarrassing or annoying. She goes further than I do. She even says abused and tormented is too vague. And I tend to think that that's a little bit more narrow than just annoyed. But we simultaneously live in a state where we expect everybody not to be annoyed or offended by carrying guns, but we can say it's illegal to be annoyed by a couple of Facebook posts. And I get it here in the this is different. This is a facial and an as-applied challenge related to the future of the law, not related only just to this. But we have to look at what the law says and how it gets applied. And I think the Court of Criminal Appeals, and I know that this court and Justice Baker was limited by the briefing in McDonald. And in the briefing in McDonald, I pulled all of the briefs, and no one cites the Long case. No one goes through that. And so at that point, it puts the court at a disadvantage in looking at 1980 and 83 and 93 and 96, when in 1996, this exact language, the court says, is too vague and it needs to be stricken. And so in 97, they fix it. And then in 2013, they revert back. I don't think to ignore or disrespect the court. I just think that was the intent of, hey, we should be able to modify these two and make harassment as part of stalking. And absent a message from the court, and when the court in Ex Parte Low or in Doyle says, we have a concern, can the law get better? Absent that, they make the law broader and say, if the court's fine with it, then let's make all internet speech protected. So I worry. We represent a lot of teenagers who are impulsive and say lots of things repeatedly online. And lots of high schools have to deal with what this is and what constitutes harassment these days. So we all need guidance. I wish the manner of our speech was more polite. I wish we had more guidance in what constitutes harassment and stalking. We believe that a message that this court could send to the legislature can improve that law by looking at that statute and saying that the court had decided this already in 1996 and we're going to revert back to law. I appreciate your consideration. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Gonzalez. And thank you, Ms. Galindo. Thank you. This case will be submitted. And the court does stand in recess. Thank you very much.